It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch, one of our regular contributors, and really one of those guys that I find amazing to talk to, Dr. Steve G. Jones, a board-certified clinical hypnotherapist. He has been practicing hypnotherapy since 1980s. He's the author of 22 books on hypnotherapy. He's also a member of the National Guild of Hypnotists, American Board of Hypnotherapy, president of the American Alliance of Hypnotists, on the board of directors of the Los Angeles chapter of the American Lung Association, and director of the California State Registered Steve G. Jones School of Hypnotherapy. In order to keep up with the very latest in research, he regularly attends training conferences. And you can find out more about Steve G. Jones, where else? SteveGJones.com. Steve G. Jones, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. Good to be here.
Absolutely. So, all right, so catch me up. I just saw a picture of you and Dr. Joe Vitale up in Vegas. What's going on?
Joe was here handling a few things and relaxing, and I was able to catch up with him. We had a breakfast, and we talked about some new ideas that we're working on. We're going to create the sequel to the Wealth Trigger, such a powerful product designed to help people get in touch with their wealth potential. We're going to create the third version of that, since one and two did so well. And we talked about a follow-up to our Law of Attraction certification program and a few other ideas. And we just really made the most of what I would call a power breakfast.
I love it. I love it. It's kind of like breakfast. What do you call it? Money for breakfast, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And more importantly, helping people for breakfast.
That's right. I love it. I love it. All right. So listen, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. As you probably heard my intro there about clarity, you're the guy that I'm so excited to have on the show because you really deal with the mind more than just about anybody I know. You have a certain understanding of how the mind works and how we either are managed by our thoughts or how we manage our thoughts. What is your take on clarity? How important is that?
Well, I think it's everything. You know, you can do a lot of things and not get much done if you're not clear. You just become kind of like a shotgun rather than a bullet. You've got to really be focused. And as you said, you know, if things aren't coming your way, then maybe you're not clear on what you want. I remember in my life at a certain point looking for a house and looking. This house didn't look right. That house didn't look right. And what I really found out was I didn't want to buy a house in that time in that area. So if you're not clear on your intentions, and you can think you are, but if you're not clear, your actions are going to be ineffective and meaningless.
Yeah, you know what, and I think that's a great example. I mean, you know what, we think we want that house, or we think we want that business, or we think we want whatever, fill in the blank, and then it's just not feeling right. We're struggling, and then you know, after maybe months or whatever, you decide, you know what, I'll just put that off. And all of a sudden you get that peace and you realize, oh, you know what, it wasn't for me at this time in my life. I wasn't ready for it because I wasn't really clear as to what I wanted. I think that's a great example.
Yeah, thanks. And I think a lot of people get caught up in this. I mean, marriage, you know, they get on this track to marriage. Okay, I guess we're going to get married. And, you know, their heart's not really into it. People can tell their heart's not really into it. And then, you know, they realize after the fact, in many cases, that it wasn't the right move for them. So it can be starting a new business, moving somewhere, getting a house, you know, a relationship that they're in or thinking of getting in or thinking of furthering a car they're thinking of buying. It could be anything. But if you feel that you're really not invested in it, maybe take a step back and realize it's okay to not be into it right now. And what's much more powerful is to realize that and to give yourself the liberty to step away from it and to be okay in that situation.
Yeah, and I like that. Let me ask you this. Let's talk about this. Okay, so here's somebody who would like to get clarity. They want to be clear. They want to have that passion that we all get when we're clear. What are your suggestions? How can somebody go from confused or unclear to clear?
Well, there are a number of great ways to do it, you know, and this is going to sound a little off the beaten path. It's going to sound perhaps a little non-scientific, but it's something that actually is backed up with science. And this is something that a friend of mine introduced me to just maybe a week ago. And it sounds strange, I know. But if you stand, just stand with your legs about a foot or two apart, just a normal stance for you, shoulder width apart, and close your eyes, and ask yourself a series of calibrating questions first. Am I standing on the ground? Now, yes should be leaning forward. No should be leaning backwards. Now, it's not some metaphysical force. It's not the wind. It's not anything unusual moving you. It's yourself. It's your subconscious mind sending signals through your legs to your feet to move you either forward or backwards. So you ask calibrating questions. Am I standing on the ground? Okay, lean forward. That's a yes. Am I wearing clothes? Okay, lean forward. That's a yes. Am I alive? Okay, I lean forward. That's a yes. Make sure you get the correct answer for the questions that you know the answer to. Then start asking questions you don't know the answer to. Should I buy this car? Should I marry this person? Do I want to go to the gym today? You can ask all kinds of yes or no questions. That is a great way to get clear, a way that I just found out about. But the beauty of it is it's kind of like hypnosis because it gets to the subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind is sending signals to your body to move it in a certain way to give you the answers that you want. Now, that's just one of many ways to get clear.
You know what? I like that because, first of all, we're starting with the known, and it allows you to understand or feel, surety, right, a certainty about what you already know, and it allows you to, you know, get grounded in those feelings before you start asking the unknown questions that might be puzzling you. So I love that because you're starting with the known, and then you're gaining confidence and strength, and then you're working towards the unknown. I like that. It's a very simple, you can do anywhere kind of solution.
Yeah, it's fun. And when my friend first showed this to me, I thought, you've got to be kidding. Because he said, you know, when somebody asked me if I wanted to go to the gym, I asked myself first, and I said, what do you mean you ask yourself? And he said, well, here's what I do. I stand here, and I say, do I want to go to the gym? And if I lean forward, it's a yes, backwards, it's a no. Now, sometimes you know the answer to something. Now, if you already know the answer consciously, don't use that method. It's just going to slow you down. But if you're unsure and you don't know, realize that your subconscious mind does know. Now, sometimes you'll just stand there. Sometimes there won't be a forward or backward motion. And that's okay also. That means you don't have a definite stance, pardon the pun, on the issue. But in many, many cases, this can streamline your entire day.
No, I think it's fascinating. And I think it's also fascinating, too. You know, one of the things that I talk about is, you know, I like to use the example because I remember this so vividly when I was in college and also early on in my career where I would be, you know, literally flat broke. You know, here I am, I'm barely making my ends meet, and all of a sudden I have a major car malfunction, and I need whatever it is, $300, $500, $600 to fix my car. Now, I don't have $500 or $600, and so, you know, at first this is, you know, what I think is an overwhelming issue, and it certainly looks like tragedy. But then because I'm so clear as to what I need and why I need it, that, you know, all of us come up with that money. You know, we come up with the money to fix a car or to get, you know, to make tuition or to buy the outfit for that interview that, you know, whatever. We come up with the money because, again, it's so vividly clear as to what we need and why we need it. And within a few days, you know, come, you know, whatever, whatever happens, you come up with the money.
Absolutely. I've seen that time and again. I have a friend who does a program, and it's called Awesomeness Fest. He puts on this program every year. It's in a different part of the world. It's a little pricey for the people to get to. They've got to pay their round trip airfare, and they've got to pay for their hotel and their food while they're there. So we're talking about probably around $3,000 commitment on average. I see people find a way to get there. I mean, this thing is sold out every year, and the people who get there, In their everyday lives, they usually don't have the means, the financial means, to do a lot of things. But when it comes to that, they do. What they find when they get there is they oftentimes have a breakthrough or a connection that's going to help them out quite a bit. But it's things like that. You know, maybe there's a, you know, Tony Robbins seminar in town, and people think, well, I don't know if I'll find the money. And like you said with the car, you know, they find the money. So you find the money to do the things that matter to you. And when you get clear about something like a car, you know, got to have a car, got to get from point A to point B. When you find it's a necessity, when you make it a necessity in your life, when you get to that point, it becomes clear. So you can apply this to all kinds of things rather than just a car or a seminar or a trip. You can apply it to, you know, a college education or building a business or making new contacts or anything else you want to apply it to.
Yeah, and what I find interesting about this clarity issue, that it isn't based on money. Again, you and I just gave great examples of why it doesn't – money has no play in it. It's not based on technology. It's not based on environment. You don't have to be in the right neighborhood. You don't have to have, you know, whatever, the latest gadgets. It's really just your own visioning of that goal or whatever it is that you're trying to solve. And all of a sudden, man, I think that the universe opens up. It unlocks itself and just – like, you know, easy as 1, 2, 3, things happen. And it's almost like a miracle. You know, and I know that this is a big part of law of attraction, and I think it's also, you mentioned hypnotic. It is hypnotic, you know, because I think when we struggle, you know, don't we kind of make that an affirmation or a hypnotic chronic thought that, man, I'm struggling, man, I'm struggling, man, I don't know how I'm going to do this, I don't know what my next step is, and we get caught up in our own self-talk that almost hypnotically screws us up.
Oh, absolutely. And I like what you said, Bert, about it not being related to money. You know, I was reading a book recently called David and Goliath by one of my favorite authors, which is Malcolm Gladwell, and he was talking about the inverted U-shaped curve. You know, at a certain point, money helps. The more money you have, the more things you can do. At a certain point, it starts working against you. And the Davids can come along and do better than a big corporation with a lot of money, because the big corporation with a lot of money gets a little sidetracked. They have a lot of money, but there's certain things because of that that they're not able to see. So there is some sort of a trade-off that happens. If you get too big, you can start to lose sight of certain things, and having money is not essential in a competition. You might think, well, I've just started this business and going up against this established business. There's a certain advantage, as brought out in the book, that you can have even starting out. And what that comes down to is your focus and your passion and simplifying all the things that you're talking about. When you are focused on what you are doing, you are going to be more streamlined than you've ever been before, and you're going to get the job done.
I love it. And we're going to end on that note. Dr. Steve G. Jones, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. It's good to have you back as always. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Hey, I appreciate you guys tuning in today as we're, what do you call it, heading back to school for some of our kids. It's just a exciting time. I don't know about you, but summer seemed to have just blown by. Just crazy, crazy blown by. If you haven't done so already, I want to encourage you to go over to youtube.com/BurtJMartinez. That's youtube.com/BurtJMartinez. And subscribe my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Got a great interview up there with Tom Hopkins. And we just did another interview with Boss Rutan. Fixing to go out to Las Vegas to do an interview with Randy Couture. And let's see, you have who else in the works? David Bautista, who plays Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. That's going to be a great interview as well. So looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And just go to youtube.com, Burt J. Martinez, or just type in Burt Martinez, and you'll see my bald little head. And I'm telling you, it's going to be a great time. I'm going to be throwing up videos there all the time. The only place you'll find them is on my YouTube channel. And as we start to tweak our programming, we're going to be doing more and more videos. Of course, those videos will also be broadcasted here. So you only get the audio, but if you want to look at the audio and the visual together, then, of course, youtube.com, Burt J. Martinez is the place to go. All right, let's see. You know, it's interesting how our mind works. I want to give you this strategy. One of the things that I've been doing is I've been using the lockout screen of my smartphone to impress upon my mind the, you know, like my top four things to do, right? I apologize. I was looking at my board and then looking at my phone to see if they were in alignment. And anyway, so what happens is this. Look, it has been scientifically proven that we, on average, look at our phones about 100 times a day. I think it's like 124 times or something. It's a lot. And when you turn your, close your phone off, all right? It's not turned off, but you know what I'm talking about? It's inactive. And then you go to turn it back on or to reactivate it, you'll have a lockout screen, right? For those who lock their phones. And so instead of just having a lockout screen that's blank, my lockout screen has my top four priorities for the week or for the month or for the year, right? And I want you to think about the power of this, right? So if there is a message that helped you remember your top priorities for the day, for the week, for the year, and you were looking at it 100 plus times a day, the impact that that will have on your business, on your career, on your goals, on your family. Think about that. It's absolutely amazing. It's very powerful. It doesn't cost any money. And I believe it's going to help you get to your goals faster. Anyway, we have another guest coming on, Jeffrey Small, who's been on the show before. But I wanted to play this recording that I did with Lou Ferrigno. And I'll be back.
Bart, we're coming to you live here at the Aqua, Aqua Calientes Casino at the Lou Ferrigno Legacy event. I'm so excited to be here with the incredible Hulk himself, Lou Ferrigno. Lou, it's great to be here with you.
It's great. I'm joy to be here because the content, there's so many competitors here to have a smile on their face. They're having a good time. It's going to be a big extravaganza. We're having a powerlifting championship in the morning.
Oh, I can't wait. You know, last time you and I talked, we were in
You know what? I guess I won't be playing that. I didn't know the audio was that bad. That was really bad audio. How about we're going to, what do you call it, do this audio that I did with John Ratzenberger. Check out John Ratzenberger as we talk about different things.
Guys, welcome to Money for Lunch. And with me is the legendary John Ratzenberger. John, welcome to the show.
What's it called?
Money for Lunch.
Money for Lunch. So I give you money and you give me lunch?
Is exactly. That... It's almost like that. It's about, you know, it's primarily about going out, hanging out, and you know how you're kind of entrepreneurial, and so sometimes when you get out for lunch, two entrepreneurs get out for lunch, what do they really talk about? Business, quote, money. They talk about ideas, right?
No, I've never had that experience. No, let's see, my big entrepreneurial invention was EcoPack.
I remember that.
Strip of paper that's a... It's like
accordion?
Yeah, accordionized. Yeah, that's me. Starbucks uses it. A lot of companies use it. But let's see. Two entrepreneurs get together. One's usually looking for money. Usually.
Well, okay, let's say that you and I were partners. Wouldn't we get together and just kind of hang out and talk about business? What's going on at the shop?
Not at lunch.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, lunch is the worst place to talk about ideas because you're always interrupted.
Yes.
You have a waitress or waiter coming up asking how the lunch was or would you like a dessert, and that's the last thing you want to put in your idea pitching or thinking about ideas. So I find like a park bench is good, things like that where you're not going to get interrupted.
I like it. I like it. All right, so let's talk about this, because you are an entrepreneur. You're also obviously a well-respected actor, voice talent. And people know of your success, and that's kind of, you know, the surface stuff. We see how successful you are. What I'd like to do is maybe
find... talk about my failures?
Your failures a little
sure.
bit.
Sure. Yeah, I was a horrible baseball player as a kid, so I had to work extra hard to get on the team. And that was the advantage of, you know, being on Little League back then, because you had to work hard at it if you wanted to make the team. So at 8 years old, we had to face an emotional crisis and learn how to work through it. But now, you just show up and you're on the team.
And you get a trophy.
And you get a trophy even for coming in 11th. But you don't have to face an emotional crisis till you're 30. So it's a lot easier now.
Well, okay, so let's back up. Let me ask you this. Do you think that we have become weaker society because we're not...
Absolutely.
...as accountable?
Absolutely. There's more whining going on. And I hear more and more stories of... kids that show up to job interviews with one or both parents.
Isn't that outrageous?
We might as well just pack up our tents and go home.
All right, so let me ask you this. Did you have a time in your career where you almost just packed it up?
No, because I didn't set out to be an actor. I was a working carpenter. I was a journeyman carpenter, and I was doing good. And acting came along, and so if there wasn't an acting job, I'd just go back to carpentry. That's the nice thing about having a skill like that, whether it's bricklaying or plumbing or carpentry, is that no one can ever take it away from you, and you're always going to be working.
Right, it's always in demand. All right, so...
Well, also anywhere in the world.
Sure. So how did acting happen? If you were a journeyman, and how did it accidentally happen?
I was building a new... lobby for this theater in London. I went to visit there for a little bit. And somebody said, do we need a new line? Oh, okay, I can do that for you. And as I was building it, there was a theater group rehearsing, and I kept watching them thinking, boy, that looks like it could be fun. But they weren't very good. They were very political, very left-wing, down with capitalism kind of nonsense. And I said to the owner of the theater, I said, do they get paid for this? He said, oh, yeah. They get paid for this. They tour through Europe. I said, wait a second. I said, I can do better with a sock puppet. But that's kind of how I started.
Awesome. All right. So what was your first big break?
Big break.
Because you didn't just start on Cheers. What led up to Cheers? You remember that?
Well, 10 years in London.
Really? So you spent 10 years in London. All right.
Oh, yeah. I toured, me and another American. We toured through Europe with our own comedy show for 4 years. And then I started writing shows for the BBC. And then I did 28 films over there. Empire Strikes Back and Superman and Gandhi, Bridge Too Far. So it all built. I mean, I was just building. But I was doing very well in London. And I got asked to come to Los Angeles to write a show for CBS. Otherwise, I'd still be there.
Wow. So they asked you to come over. That's amazing. All right, so let's talk about this. You just mentioned Star Wars. A lot of people don't know that you were in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, Empire Strikes Back.
And you just got an award also. You just got inducted.
Yeah, see, there's me in an Empire Strikes Back.
Let's get this picture in here.
That's me right there. Looks pretty much the same.
Almost identical. Look at that. So looking in the mirror.
And then some folks just came up, and out of the blue, I didn't know anything about this. They inducted me. It says, in appreciation of your contributions to the Star Wars legacy. And they're the Rebel Legion fan organization. So I've just become an honorary member. So
that is fantastic. Now, were you surprised?
Well, absolutely. It was a surprise. But they actually went to a lot of trouble to make that. So I was very, very touched.
That's amazing. You know what? And that's cool that they went through all that trouble and kind of surprised you and shared a moment with you.
Yeah, exactly. And they gave me a patch, the Rebel Alliance Infantry Detachment. Who knows? Maybe at the end of the day, they'll be the ones that save us from Islam. So, but there's
enough not even Islam. I think if anybody, you know, it may just be ourselves as we get... I don't know, dumber and dumber, for lack of better terms.
Well, kids certainly, I noticed that in schools now, they really don't teach the patriotic things like Valley Forge and
right.
The Revolutionary War and what it took to build this country. And they don't teach any kind of history. It's the crazy stuff.
I think what's happening is that they're trying to become so politically correct in everything that we're not standing up for anything.
Well, that's... Like you said, we're becoming stupid.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm responsible for it, so I have to apologize for it.
Partly your fault?
Because I helped build the stage at Woodstock.
That was you!
Yeah. I was, like I said, journeyman carpenter, and I got a job there, and I helped build the stage, and I was a heavy equipment operator. So if I had known all the damage that philosophy was going to cause, I would have ended it there.
That's great. John, thank you so much for hanging out, taking
Not
time to hang out with us.
Not at all. Thank you. Thank you very much. And what's the, it's Money for Lunch?
Money for Lunch.
Okay.
All right. That was my fun interview there with John Ratzenberger. And he is such, such a neat guy. I'll give you something that we didn't capture. And I certainly wish we would have captured on video or audio or whatever. And so John and I are talking, and this police officer, a Phoenix police officer, walked over to us and said, "Hey, Mr. Ratzenberger, you don't know me." And John goes, "Oh, yeah, I know. I remember you. We met in California. Your name is Sergeant Stadenko." But the guy had just a very sharp memory. And I guess that comes from, you know, having to learn all those lines, I guess. But just a very funny guy and learned a lot, you know, being a carpenter, how he got into acting, how he, you know, some of the things that he went through to have his career. And as you can tell, he wasn't like... very concerned. Interestingly enough, when he wasn't acting, as he said, he was going back to carpentry. And when an acting job came around, he was, you know, back to work as an actor. And there's, I think, a certain amount of stability that occurs when you have that kind of, you know, mentality, right? He was never too good to go back to what a lot of people would perceive as just plain old manual labor. He liked being a carpenter. So when he wasn't acting, he went back to being a carpenter. All right, let's see. Let's get this party started with Jeffrey Small. Jeffrey Small grew up in Brevard County and has been working with clients and their families for almost 30 years of industry and market experience. Jeffrey is dedicated to providing his clients and the public with an array of diverse financial products and services. Is licensed with the Florida Department of Financial Services, a certified senior advisor through the Society of Certified Senior Advisors, and recently completed the requirements to become an investment advisor representative. Both he and Arbor Financial are also members in good standing of the Central Florida Better Business Bureau and the National Ethics Association. Jeffrey Small, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's always good to have you here. There's, a lot of stuff happening. So anyway, it's good to have you on the show. Good to talk about, money and all the different, things that are happening. So why don't you give us an overall view? Right now, the market seems very robust, very expensive to me. It doesn't look like there's a lot of room for gain and possibly, maybe a correction. So give me your take. Am I reading it wrong?
Well, I think you're reading it like everybody else, Bert, and it's harder to predict the short-term market than it is the longer-term market. But, you know, what we see is an epic movement of money coming back into the market at these peaks. Yesterday, Schwab reported they've opened up more new accounts this year than they have since the year of 2000, which was also the peak. So they've kind of hit up, and you know, everyone's kind of flushing money into the market. But the market keeps growing at this point because earnings are moving. And so even though there's no real spending by these companies to help really hire new people and invest in new earnings, the market keeps moving because earnings are growing. And so as long as we have, you know, three quarters of the companies reporting so far have exceeded their earnings projections, that's going to keep money coming into the market. There's not going to be a correction in the short term.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, one of the things that I'm, kind of holding back to see what's going to happen is, on one side, we have this possible correction in the market. As you said, a lot of people are saying the market's got to correct. On the other side, I had a guest on the show a couple of months back, and he is a demographer. He studies, what's happening with the demographies. And one of the things that he said is, you know, we had this correction starting in 2007 or 2008, whenever it was. And, you know, the house market kind of blew up. And so for a while there, they weren't building any more houses. And now they have his research is found that there's an actual house shortage. Because for like close to a decade, they didn't really build a lot of new homes, right? And so now you have people who are clamoring to buy a house, and houses are selling, you know, above what people are asking for. They're selling in 2 or 3 days. They can't build houses fast enough. So I find that, you know, that kind of like what you're talking about. We have all, you know, we have some steady, consistent growth. But at the same time, I'm just kind of like holding back to see what happens.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the housing issue, because you're right. The housing market, as you know, got beaten up pretty bad, and new home starts fell to epically low levels after the 2008-2009 correction. But that's kind of what's happened to the market too, Bert, because We have half the amount of publicly traded companies that we had in 1999 that we do today. So we have half of the amount of stocks to purchase that we had back in 1999. And so even the market has shrunk. So that's another reason why the dynamic of the market's increased, because there's less stocks to invest in. Hence, like your demographer friend has said, market prices have risen because there's less homes to buy, or not as much demand. There's more demand for homes than there is supply. And so the same thing has happened to the stock market, ironically.
Yeah, it's okay. So let's talk about this. And again, I'm asking this information here just for demonstration purposes, and you know, anything that you and I talk about, it shouldn't be relied on, and people should definitely get advice from somebody who knows their financial situation, or should maybe connect with you personally. But you know, Jeffrey, right now, what are you telling people to do with their money? Are you putting it into cash? Are you just sitting on it in savings? Are you still investing in a sector of the market? What is kind of your strategy right now?
Oh, I love that question. That is such a great question, Bert. I think as far as it relates to what folks should do, I think you've got to take a long-term perspective on your money and say, what am I going to earn if I go all into these all these stocks that are at epic 52-week highs and actually highs forever? A lot of these stocks have hit all-time highs. And so nobody really knows what to buy in the market, even though some sectors are doing better than others. So we take a more methodical approach. Well, we like to be not invested in common stocks, but invested in things that produce dividends, interest rates, or yields. And so our clients are going to net 5% long-term as a rate of return based on those dividends, interest rates, or yields. And so that should beat the market long-term, because when the correction does happen, and it will happen, we just don't know when, that correction will drag your average or net rate of return down over the next 10 years significantly, probably to a negative number when it happens. And so it's really important to look at your money through a time tunnel and say, what can I earn the next 10 years? But more importantly, what can I net as a net rate of return? Because the market hasn't even done 5% the last 17 years. So we're just looking through a 10-year time tunnel. So we're focused on fixed income. I divested myself from all of my stock holdings about 3.5 weeks ago. And we're not advocating anybody get into growth at this point unless they actually want to be in growth for a percentage of their money.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, and you know what I like about your strategy there too, looking at these fixed assets, looking at the rate of return, is that you have a better chance of protecting the principal, which is always important, depending on your age, right? I mean, I'm 55 years old. And so I'm definitely more conservative than when I was 35 years old. I don't want to have to try to make up a $10,000 or $100,000 loss.
Well, that's exactly correct. And you know, at your age, you don't want to have to play the recapture game or the waiting game to get back to break even. We've all kind of experienced that, and it's very distasteful. It's not very much fun at all, and you know, you reach a point where you don't even want to open up your statement. So that's exactly correct, Bert.
Now, the strategy that you just talked about, would you advocate the same thing for somebody who was, let's say, 25 or 30?
Well, if they were 25 or 30, I probably would not advocate a fixed income strategy. That really applies to folks that are over 50. And I think what you have to understand is that when we go through these long-term cycles in the stock market, and I've talked about this stuff on many media platforms, Bert, but the reality is when we go through these long-term cycles, we see either a 14 to 20-year increase in the market, a true bull long-term pattern upwards for 14 or 20 years, or the opposite, where we see a 14 to 20-year bear and very little growth at all. So you have to remember how do we modernize our money today? Because we're in the middle or at the end, technically, of a long-term bull cycle that people are talking about on TV like it's just beginning. And so, you know, the market's been growing for 8 years, so you've got to be very, very careful how you posture yourself at this point. And so there's, you know, we don't know what the correction will be, but if you're 25 and 30 years old and you want to buy Facebook and hold on to that for the next 20 years, hey, by all means, more power to you. There's nothing wrong with that. Same thing with the perennial tech players like Netflix or Google or Amazon. Those companies are going to keep growing, and they're going to keep dominating globally. So there are some good long-term plays out there. If you just want to bury the money, look at the stock value of the statement in 10 years, 15 years, that's fine. If you're younger, you can do that. But at our ages, in the 50s, and when folks get in their 60s and 70s and 80s, they really have no right being in those stocks unless they can take a punch in the nose. They got, you know, $2-3 million in their portfolio or more, so they can take a 30% hit or a 40% hit and not have a change of lifestyle. For folks that have portfolio values of less than $1.5 million, they really can't take a punch in the nose. They don't have any money to lose, especially if they're creating income from that money to augment and enjoy their retirement income.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And it goes to show you, I think that what a lot of people miss about money or don't understand about money, and you said it there when you said when you're looking at something for 10 or 20 years, you know, compound interest is a very sexy thing when it's working for you. It's not as sexy when it's working against you, but when it's working for you, I think the big secret that a lot of people just miss is that it is a long-term play. I mean, and that's why you have to start early. That's why you have to be consistent. That's why you have to, not mess with your principal, right? I mean, you leave that money in there and then the magic happens.
Well, that's right. You're exactly right about that. And so, you know, to your folks that you talk to all the time about, they're listening to the show today, you know, if you want to have some stock exposure, pick a winner for yourself. Don't give it to a mutual fund in Fidelity or American Funds and let them flip over the fund, 80% of the value of the fund they're flipping over annually. Just buy something and hold on to it. If you see a good small company you like, you think it's going to grow and it is growing, then buy it and hold on to it. That's where stock wealth is created. Creating wealth in this market is not by buying a mutual fund or an index. It's going to be buying stocks that you think are going to appreciate substantially over the next 5 to 10 years. And you can live without that money if you take a hit. That's the way we appreciate from this market perspective going forward. Or we look at the fixed income components to create income. Depending upon what your needs are, everybody's situation is different.
Right, right. You know, let's talk about, and I don't know if you handle this, do you get into tax strategies with your clients?
Well, taxes are always a concern. You know, we do have some programs that are tax strategy oriented, but you know, you've got to be in a tax bracket to where it makes sense. And for most folks today, if you've got less than $150,000 a year, you know, there aren't any really good tax of income, $150,000 of income, and you're retired or close to retirement. There really aren't any good tax strategies to take advantage of out there. There really aren't, other than putting away money on a pre-tax basis through your 401k. IRA, profit sharing plan, whatever.
Right, right. And I just wanted to mention this, and we won't get very deep into it, but when you are building wealth, and this is something that, again, learn from my mistakes for those guys out there who are, are just now getting ready to retire or maybe whatever, they're not maybe thinking about this, but having not only a financial plan, you need a financial strategy or plan to grow your wealth, but you also need to start thinking about the other side, which is the tax planning side, because that's a serious component of long-term wealth. There are some things where you're able to pay no tax or very little tax, and that is important when you start pulling that money out.
It really is. I mean, you know, somebody told me one time that if you're rich or you're poor, it's good to pay taxes because it means you have money. And so, you know, unfortunately, taxes are part of the deal. We've got to pay our tax. If we've got a lot of income, we're going to, you know, the good news is we got income. The bad news is we got to pay some tax. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, when you're retired, of course, you don't have to pay employment tax. You don't have your 401k contributions. So hopefully that zeros out what you were, you know, netting before you retired, so to speak. So there's, you know, just part of the game, unfortunately.
Right, right. But, and again, I like the way you said that. It is part of the game, And if you're and if you're in it to win it, it's you got to look at both of those. You really do. I remember this is something a lot of people won't remember this name or maybe never heard of a gentleman named Ross Perot. So Ross Perot was this billionaire in Texas, and so he invested quite heavily in T-bills, government bonds, because they were tax deferred. And so because he had, you know, again, this gentleman is on a different level than 95% of us will ever get to. But he had so much cash that he invested it quite a bit in these government bonds. And he basically paid like 3 or 4% in taxes a year.
Yeah, I remember that. He had a lot of municipal bonds that were paying, you know, 2-2.5%, very small rates of interest, you know, but when you got $50 billion in muni bonds at 3%, that's a lot of money when it's tax-free, right?
So anyway. Absolutely. Absolutely. But again, it goes to, you know what, this is an extreme example, but I think it's a good one of depending on where you're at in life. So if you have a lot of cash and you don't want to risk the principal, maybe getting a 2% return on your money is perfect for you versus, again, as we started talking about earlier, the guy who's 20 or 25, he's able to take a bigger risk. He doesn't have as much cash. So growth and being aggressive is a perfect opportunity for that individual.
Yeah, they need to be thinking longer term, but they need to be buying individual issues, individual components. Pick the best ones that are out there. Don't outsource it to a mutual fund. But speaking to your point on taxes, you know, municipal bond interest rates are so low today, Bert, that the justification to purchase one to save taxes, the math does not work out in your favor. You're not really going to save in taxes. You're better off buying a good corporate because you're gonna put more money in your pocket even with the tax. And that's kind of where we are today. Until that imbalance gets perfected again and we see bonds that are priced better on the muni end with higher rates, unfortunately, I think we're going to be stuck there for a while. A lot of municipalities aren't doing very well right now. So, you know, I don't know if I'd be looking at muni bonds as an option today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. We've seen municipalities file bankruptcy, so it's not the safe bet that it used to be. And you know what? Something else that I want to go back to what you were saying is pick – when you said something like pick a company – that works for you, a company that you like, something like you said something along those lines. And I want to talk about that because a lot of people base their choice on stock or stock history or the fact that this stock is you know, has been doing this, that, or the other thing versus a company. And this was something that, you know, I learned relatively quick. If you focus on, if you pick a company that you know, like, and trust, and you have that long-term mindset, you should be okay. Versus the day trading type mentality, which people are just picking a stock. Hey, this stock's going to do something this week or this month, and you know we're going to get a 5% you know bump off of this stock. That's the kind of what do you call it, up-down gambling type strategy that, you know, that can make you a lot of money, but it can also cost you a lot of money. And that's why it's important, back to what you're saying, is pick a company that you like, that you know. Warren Buffett, it was a great example. Here he is, he's good friends with Bill Gates, but he doesn't quite, at least when he did this interview, it was Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and they were, I think they were, at Harvard or something like that, and there were Warren Buffett talks about, you know, I love Bill, I know Bill, but I don't invest in his company or in tech companies because I don't understand them. And he talked about, you know, the companies that he does invest in are companies that he understands their business model, and that's what he invests in, is the companies that he understands, not the companies that are necessarily getting all the hype or all the media attention.
Well, sure. He looks for diamonds out there that he thinks will appreciate because, you know, ultimately these stocks become hot commodities. And with, you know, half the amount of stocks traded in the market today, And a lot of companies really dominating their spaces. I mean, it's pretty easy to pick which stocks are going to be here for a while and probably do well. I mean, you know, a year and a half ago, I made a call that Facebook would be around $200 a share in 3 years. And that was at $103 a share back then. Today, it's about $170. So it's not too hard to not pick these companies and buy and hold. It's pretty easy to do, actually. And so you just got to find the ones that are growing, that have good spaces, that are perennials and leaders in their space. And so the irony is there's also small companies that you can find that are like that as well. And so, you know, and that's why you have to stay away from a mutual fund, because they're not going to buy and hold for 5 to 10 years. They are going to sell out their positions. Some of them flip more than 100% of the fund's account, the fund positions on an annualized basis. Some of them flip 30, 50, 60, 70, 80%. So that's why we do not like mutual funds at all, especially at this market peak. If you're in a mutual fund, you can only get hurt there.
Yeah. Absolutely correct. All right, Jeffrey. So let's say that somebody just heard you. They're saying, man, I have all my money in mutual funds. What do I do? Because, you know, your mutual fund, if you, you know, how do I do something with my mutual fund without taking a big hit?
Well, they, first of all, if they've got money in mutual funds, they need to get out of the stock market before Wall Street locks in their profits, because at some point Wall Street will lock in their profits and they'll be telling us to buy on the retail end. So you want to make sure you get out now and park that in cash, and then find a way to get what you want for your money, either by reallocating into individual components or going into fixed income if you need income. But you have to work with an advisor that's schooled and educated in those areas. And, you know, we have a network of advisors that we work with throughout the country. So if you don't work with me, I've got other folks in Burt's locale that can help you.
Yeah. And again, I want to emphasize this. When you're doing stuff with your mutual funds, you definitely want to get some expert opinion, expert coaching, because there are some things there you have to be aware of. Jeffrey Small, always good to have you on the show, and looking forward to having you back again.
Hey, Bert, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. We'll see you soon.
All righty. Good stuff there from Jeffrey Small about you and your money. A lot of options out there, a lot of great options. I mean, again, if you're not sure what option's best for you, do not try to do it on your own. Make sure you understand it completely. Listen, you can go out to – you can look up Jeffrey Small at Arbor Financial. You can reach out to somebody that you already know, like, and trust. And it's, but, you know, bottom line is there are a lot of great options, a lot of ways for you to protect your principal, grow your money at the same time. As always, I'm grateful that you're here. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/ Bert Martinez. Or just go to YouTube, plug in Bert Martinez, and we'll go from there. Anyways, always, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate you. Please share this show. Let's help as many people as we can. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.